Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Marcia James, Mario Ritter, and Mernush Karimian Ainsworth. Later, we will have two very mysterious education reports. Anna Mateo will tell us how murder mysteries are being used for lessons in classrooms. Then, Dan Friedel will share information on mystery stories for all levels of readers. But first, here is Marcia James.
Two United States senators released a commentary this week saying America will continue to support its Asian allies. Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona and Democratic Senator Robert Menendez of Florida wrote in the South Korean Joongang Daily newspaper. In the commentary, the senators made a bipartisan pledge. They wrote that no matter who wins the presidential election in November, the U.S. will stay active in Asia. The American politicians said the alliance with South Korea will never waver. The two senators also referred to presidential candidates who suggested that we ought to negotiate better deals with our partners and allies. Presumptive Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has, in the past, criticized both Japan and South Korea. During the campaign to get the Republican Party nomination, he said Japan and South Korea pay too little for American troops in their countries. Trump has said he would consider withdrawing troops from the region if Japan and South Korea refuse to increase security payments to the U.S. The senators noted there has been military cooperation between South Korea and the U.S. That cooperation followed North Korea's fourth nuclear test and long-range rocket launches earlier this year. Recently, the U.S. and South Korea agreed to deploy the American Terminal High Altitude Area Defense Missile System, or THAAD. China and Russia opposed the deployment of the THAAD system. I'm Marcia James.
China's detention of five Hong Kong booksellers has raised concerns about its support for the One Country, Two Systems policy. The policy was put in place when Britain returned Hong Kong to Chinese rule in 1997. It was to ensure Hong Kong's right to govern itself for 50 years, until 2047. Over 3 months in late 2015, four booksellers based in Hong Kong disappeared while they were away from the city. Li Bo is the general manager of the publishing company where the four worked. He also disappeared. He was the only one who disappeared while he was in Hong Kong. All five reappeared in January and February. They said on television that they had been detained by Chinese officials for selling books that mainland Chinese are not permitted to read. China let Li and two others return to Hong Kong in March on bail. Lam Wing Ki was released later. At a news conference in Hong Kong last month, Lam said Chinese security agents kept him in a cell by himself for 5 months in the eastern city of Ningbo. He said they forced him to give up his legal rights and confess to so-called crimes on television. Many people were angered by Lam's story of poor treatment for publishing and selling books that were legal in Hong Kong. Members of pro-democracy parties said Hong Kong's right to govern itself had been violated. They noted that Article 4 of Hong Kong's Basic Law, or Constitution, protects freedom of speech and publication. Sean Wong is a professor of government and public administration at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. In an interview with VOA, he said China wanted to know who bought books from him and who wrote the books. This is a direct attack against the one country, two systems principle. People will no longer feel safe to publish or purchase politically sensitive items in Hong Kong, Wong said. Wang Guangya is the director of China's Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office. He spoke in Beijing this month. He accused Lam Wing Ki and his colleagues of destroying the policy of one country, two systems by publishing and selling books that attack China's political system. Lung Chunying is the chief executive of Hong Kong. Last month, he said he would tell China's central government that many people are worried about the detention of the booksellers. He said he would also call for a review of how law enforcement agencies in Hong Kong and mainland China announce when residents of the territory are detained in China. Democratic Party leader Emily Lau recently spoke on VOA's Asia Weekly podcast. She called on Chief Executive Lung to travel to Beijing to tell Chinese leaders that the one country, two systems policy is threatened. Regina Ip is a lawmaker in Hong Kong who supports the Chinese government. VOA asked for her opinion about the detention of the booksellers, but she did not answer. I'm Mario Ritter.
Cuba's new entrepreneurs have complained that one of the things missing from President Raúl Castro's reforms is a wholesale market. Currently, restaurant owners, hairdressers, and snack store owners have to buy their products in supermarkets at the same high prices as everyday consumers. But one store may show that change is coming to Cuba. At Zona Plus, produce is piled high up to the ceiling, like in a warehouse. Shop employees say the plan is eventually to sell everything in large amounts at discounted rates. They want to focus specifically on giving discounts to small businesses. So far, Zona Plus is offering only a few goods in bulk for reduced prices. But shoppers at Zona Plus said it already has an advantage because it has more items than other stores in Cuba. Usually, Cuba's supermarkets are half empty. Officials at Cimex, the state commercial corporation that owns Zona Plus, declined to comment. Last April, the Cuban government announced that some small companies would be able to buy supplies directly from government producers and wholesale outlets for the first time. However, this announcement did not say whether the reform would extend to the private sector. Cuba often likes to experiment with ideas before making them official and extending them across the country. Reforms can also be reversed. I'm Mernush Karamian Ainsworth.
This is What's Trending Today. Melania Trump is the wife of presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. On Monday night, she gave a speech at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. It is a tradition for the partner of party nominees to speak at the convention. Her 14-minute speech earned loud cheers. She talked about her experience as a Slovenian immigrant in America and praised her husband, calling him intensely loyal. Donald Trump wrote on Twitter Monday night, "It was truly an honor to introduce my wife, Melania. Her speech and demeanor were absolutely incredible. Very proud." But not long after Melania Trump's speech ended, an unemployed journalist named Jarrett Hill noticed similarities between her speech and the one given by Michelle Obama at the 2008 Democratic National Convention. Her husband, Barack Obama, officially became the Democratic presidential nominee at that convention. Hill wrote on Twitter, "Melania stole a whole graph from Michelle's speech. A one-minute part of Melania Trump's speech included words and phrases that almost exactly mirrored Michelle Obama's speech. In 2008, Michelle Obama said,
"Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values, that you work hard for what you want in life, that your word is your bond and you do what you say you're going to do, that you treat people with dignity and respect, even if you don't know them, and even if you don't agree with them. And Barack and I set out to build lives guided by these values and pass them on to the next generation, because we want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work for them."
On Monday, Melania Trump said,
"From a young age, my parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life, that your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise, that you treat people with respect. They taught and showed me values and morals in their daily lives. That is a lesson that I continue to pass along to our son, and we need to pass those lessons on to the many generations to follow, because we want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them."
People on social media quickly accused Melania Trump and the Trump campaign of plagiarizing Michelle Obama's earlier speech. Plagiarism is the act of using another person's words or ideas without giving credit to that person. In the United States, plagiarism is a serious offense for writers, students, and yes, politicians. It can damage a political campaign. In 1988, for example, current Vice President Joe Biden dropped out of the Democratic presidential race after he was accused of plagiarism in his speeches. Some of Biden's speeches closely resembled the words of former British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock. But the Trump campaign said Tuesday the issues with Melania's speech are being totally blown out of proportion. The campaign's chairman, Paul Manafort, told the Associated Press that there were a few words on it, but they are not unique words. He also said of Melania's speech, 99% of the speech talked about her being an immigrant and love of country. It is likely that Melania Trump herself did not write most of the speech. Some political observers say that Trump's speechwriter, or speechwriters, should be fired. But CNN reported Tuesday that the Trump campaign does not plan to fire anyone involved in the speechwriting process. And that's what's trending today.
Some English teachers around the world are using non-traditional materials, such as murder mysteries, to keep their students interested. And it's not just teachers. Organizations like the British Council are also using murder mysteries to teach English. As a lesson plan, a murder mystery offers basic questions for students to answer. Who is the victim? Who is the suspect? How did the murderer kill the person? And with what weapon? Where did the murder happen? What is the setting? Why did the murder happen? What is the motive? Murder mysteries also give a chance for role-playing, a technique long used in the language learning classroom. Students can take turns playing the detective, the witnesses, and the suspects. Teachers who use murder mysteries in the classroom have another reason. They are fun. There is something appealing about mysteries and solving a crime. Students may agree. The book company Scholastic recently asked children what kinds of books they like to read most. Mysteries were at the top of the list. This is hardly a surprise. Many children in the U.S. grow up reading mysteries of Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys. The murder mystery board game Clue, where players need to find who killed whom, with what weapon, and where, has been popular in the U.S. since the 1950s. And the character Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, has been popular in its many versions for decades. So many people like mysteries, and teachers are using that to help them in the classroom. Recently, The Atlantic magazine published a story on a teacher using murder mysteries to teach her class. Jenny Peak teaches English for the Cambridge School in Lisbon, Portugal. She began using murder mysteries to make teaching and learning grammar more fun. Jenny Peak says her students use the murder mystery to interview each other. They are looking for answers to those important questions we talked about earlier. Who, what, where, when, why, and how. They also must use different verb tenses to describe the events to the detective. And when describing the weapon, setting, and motive, students must find the right vocabulary. In the Atlantic article, one of Peake's students says, "Role-playing and having a clear goal of finding the murderer keeps the students focused." But is using murder to teach appropriate? Some critics say no. Janet Isserlis is an expert of teaching English as a second language at the Rhode Island Adult Education Professional Development Center. For several decades, she has taught refugees from many countries around the world. Isserlis says that for many people, but particularly many English language learners, the idea or notion of making fun of murder may be distressing.
Particularly with English language learners, so many ELLs come from countries where people have experienced violence caused by political upheaval and war. And so the notion of making fun and enjoying a murder mystery may not be enjoyable for those people.
Isserlis says that language and language learning is innately or naturally a social process. People come together and often share personal details. She says she learned early in her career to avoid questions that brought up painful memories. Instead, she focused on the present and asked questions that were in the students' comfort zones. Teacher Jenny Peake says that murder mysteries offer great chances for role-playing as well as question and answer activities. Isserlis says murder mysteries may provide rich details and complicated scenarios. But she adds, there are other, less violent choices available. Everyday life, she says, can provide enough material for teachers to use. I'm Anna Mateo.
Sherlock Holmes may be the most famous private investigator of them all. Holmes is also one bookstore owner's first choice when a new English reader asks him to recommend a mystery novel. Otto Penzler owns the Mysterious Bookshop in New York City. He also works as an editor, preparing mysteries for publication. Penzler has spent his career reading, writing, editing, and selling mystery novels. In such books, a character might have been murdered, or someone stole a valuable possession. A private detective or investigator tries to solve the case. Penzler serves as the editor of a book that comes out each year. It is called The Best American Mystery Stories. The book is a collection of short stories. Penzler is an expert on mystery writing. When asked, he has often urged visitors to his bookstore to read Arthur Conan Doyle's series about Sherlock Holmes. Penzler says English learners also might enjoy reading about Agatha Christie's detective, Hercule Poirot.
Because Agatha Christie is a worldwide known name, somebody who's sold, believe it or not, more than 2 billion books, and appeals to a wide range of people, both young, old, male, female, it doesn't matter. So I would be safe by recommending Agatha Christie, and I also always recommend Sherlock Holmes.
While both Christie and Conan Doyle lived a long time ago, Penzler says They're the most self-evident recommendations we can make in the store, and we do. For one reason, their writing is clear and simple.
Don't speak in long paragraphs. They don't get into areas that are speculative, beyond the crime. They're not controversial. They don't start making political speeches. They are directed to the solution of the crime. And they don't do it in long paragraphs. They do it in short paragraphs and not long sentences. They do it in brief, clear sentences. So it's easy for anyone to follow.
Some English teachers are using mysteries as a way to get students involved. Pensler thinks that is a great idea.
Mastering English really requires you to want to read. You have to want to read the book, and mysteries are more readable than many other kinds of books, particularly in contemporary literature, where many times the writing can be absolutely beautiful, but nothing happens.
If you want to learn about American life, you probably need to read stories from many different authors. Pensler says there is no one mystery author who paints a picture of the United States. But as a whole, writers provide detailed images of what it is like to live in a particular city or state. Most mystery writers spend their time writing about one character and one city. For example, Michael Connelly writes about a Los Angeles police detective named Harry Bosch. Bosch loves jazz music. He often eats pancakes at a diner at the Los Angeles Farmers Market when he is investigating a case. Many of Connelly's stories deal with police and politics in Los Angeles. John Sanford writes about detectives in the northern state of Minnesota. Sanford once worked as a writer at a Minneapolis newspaper. So his stories present clear details of what life is like in Minnesota. Robert B. Parker was famous for writing about a private investigator who went by only one name, Spencer. Spencer lived in Boston, and so did Parker. Parker wrote about the people and places around Boston, from costly cocktails in fancy hotels to donut shops in working-class neighborhoods. Pensler likes to suggest Lee Child for readers who are more experienced with English. Child writes about a retired Army policeman named Jack Reacher. Reacher travels by bus and train and often gets into difficult situations, but he always comes out safe in the end.
The Jack Reacher series is appealing to both men and women, both young and old. Again, you know, one of the things that's important about this is the clarity of the style. And Lee Child writes in short declarative sentences. And there's no ambiguity. There's no trying to figure out what does he really mean. What he says is exactly what he means.
The best thing about mystery novels, Pensler says, is that many of the books are part of a continuing series. There are more than 20 books about Harry Bosch, for example.
Series characters are one of the great attractions. You like a character, you like a Bosch or you like a Reacher, and you can't wait to see what happens next in their lives, as well as the mystery. And it's hard to pull off in a single book.
I'm Dan Friedel.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.